You want to sort of visualize yourself in the interview before it happens. You want to embody their values and their mission statement when you're doing the interview. You should have a current example where you demonstrated that competency in your workplace. Go to the bathroom, look in the mirror, and verbally say out loud the answer looking at yourself. That will get rid of the starstruck effect, a massive issue, and it's coming from the most competent people that I would not expect this to happen in these online interviews, because they actually forget they're on camera. The lighting's actually illuminating you and you're easy to see. You don't want anything but them focusing on you. They may think you're the right fit, but you may not be the right fit for them. It all needs to embody what you're looking for to bring out the best in you.
This episode is sponsored by Employee, your partner in finding the perfect job match. From resume assistance to interview coaching, they're committed to helping you land your dream job. Explore exciting opportunities today. For more information, check out the description section of this episode. Your next career move starts with Employee. Peter, now you've done the great work in writing the right CV to attract the right callers, got the call, and you've done well in the screening. You've got an interview. What are your tips or best practices that you've seen people do to prepare for their interviews?
An interview process is a two-way street. You're interviewing the company, you're interviewing the individual, how they're representing the company. So finding out the individual, even ask for their LinkedIn profile if they volunteer it, but you can often find it anyway. Everything you can about the company, that might even require you to do a drive to the company and even pick up information from reception. Getting a feel of the type of people, how they interact and operate within the business, can often help you visualize yourself working for that company. Any sort of thing you can find on any of the platforms about the company, any sort of positive, negative press, so doing an extensive social media search on the company, it's really critical.
And when you say about the company, you're talking about potentially what they're working on or what they're advertising in social media, their organizational values.
You want to know their values and their mission statement. You want to find that. You want to embody that. So that's in your head when you're doing the interview. The more prepared you are understanding how that company is, and you know, if you've done the research, you're more calmer in the interview, even subconsciously, because you know you've put the time and energy into this, so that they can ask you whatever you like because you've done your research. There's going to be less surprising questions because you've prepped accordingly. That comes back to what we talked about too in formatting your resume, and so identifying key competencies. If you've tailored your resume for this role, you know why they've identified with you. You know why they're calling you. You know why they've set up that interview with you. It's because you've represented yourself in a certain manner on paper. Now it's coming to game day where you're going to present yourself in a manner personally, which is basically reconfirming their initial thoughts about you.
Good one. Coming back to the preparation, understanding the organization and potentially the person that you're going to interact with during the interview. What else do you need to prepare before going in? In my experience, is make sure you've got some really good examples to highlight your skills and your capabilities. And I always pitch it as you're going into the interview to tell a story. So have multiple stories. So it's about preparation, taking the time to think of the achievements you've done, how you've gone about them, so that you can tell that story.
Definitely agree with everything you just said. I think it comes back to also and interlocking it to the key competencies that highlighted in your resume and why they've been drawn to your resume in the first place. You should have an example of where you demonstrated that competency in your workplace. That is a current example, so in the last 2 years. You're going back 3 to 5 years, you're not doing it readily enough for them to actually warrant it to be valid. And with key competencies and behavioral interviewing, you need to think about the way you answer questions in an interview. It should be structured and should be like a mini speech. So it's a four column process is the way I see it. Date, the situation, what you did to influence that situation or change that situation, and then the resulting outcome. If you structure your answer, it keeps you on track, make sure you don't waffle, and it keeps it relevant for the interviewer in this case. And you'll nail your questions more effectively because you've got a structured mindset.
Structure that you provided, I've heard of the the STAR approach, which is very similar. You explain the situation, the task needed, and the action that you actually did or contributed to, and the result that keeps you in that structure. Sometimes you might practice a structure, but in that moment, you might lose it, or you might get to a point where you digress to something else because you're nervous.
Mm-hmm.
Have you seen people do that well where they know they've gone on a tangent, but they've actually saved themselves by saying a particular thing and coming back to the actual question in hand?
Yeah, you've got to have a perception of your audience, and you've got to be able to read the tea leaves in the room in terms of their engagement with you. So I've been present in the interview as an observer to help the interviewer ask pertinent questions to evaluate them. And I've seen people who've got the role and then they've talked their way out of the role. And that's because they haven't read the audience and known when to curtail their response. So if they ask a question, even ask them and say, well, what level of detail do you want me to go to? Because they may want a superficial answer, just knowing that you've covered that skill set, or they may want an explanation, right? No, take me through from beginning to end exactly how you do this. And I'm a big believer in validating how much detail you want provided, because the number one thing that annoys me is when I'm giving feedbacks to candidates where they said you didn't go into enough detail, and this is a common pitfall, is that they didn't clarify with the person that's asking the question, well, what level of detail do you want me to go into? Because sometimes the person that's asking the question doesn't have knowledge that you have in this aspect, and they just want to make sure and tick it off their bucket list that you actually have it.
For sure.
One of the best tips I can give anyone in terms of going for an interview, and it sounds ridiculous, and I've used it for making speeches, and I go to the bathroom, look in the mirror, and verbally say out loud the answer looking at yourself, because that will get rid of the starstruck effect of losing your thought process in the interview, because there's nothing more off-putting than hearing your own voice and how you look and present in a mirror. It can throw you every day of the week.
So yes, true.
It's a little tip, but it helps, and it can help you be so more effective.
That's a really good tip.
Because you want to sort of visualize yourself in the interview before it happens. We're talking on the advent of everyone leaning towards Teams meetings and Zoom these days, and other platforms where it's all online interviews. You've got to treat that as though you're in front of the person. It's really critical. I'm seeing people come unstuck in these online interviews because they actually forget they're on camera, or they actually forget that they've got to make eye contact, and those gestures are still as valid as if you were in front of that person. So it means looking at the little camera and as though you're giving eye contact, not getting lost in thought and looking away. So looking at the camera as though you're engaged, choosing a background that's neutral. Don't choose a background that's got a pinboard of all your family photos on it. Anything that's colorful at the back is going to be a distraction. So I see it time and time again, people get this wrong. Your background should be literally a white wall. That's the best, in my opinion, and the lighting should be right. So the lighting shouldn't be directly over your head, proportionally not casting a shadow over your face. It's actually illuminating you and you're easy to see. You don't want anything but them focusing on you and what you're saying. And ideally to do this on their laptop rather than their iPhone. But if iPhone, keeping the iPhone still can be different. If you're in the workplace, you do what you do to make the situation work. Some people are doing it from their cars. If that's the only place you can actually find to get privacy and quiet, do it from the car. So try and plan the best environment to maximize your chances of success.
Yeah.
And further to that, one of the things with, and I'll say this because it's a massive issue and it's coming from the most competent people that I would not expect this to happen, and really senior people, is the interview booked in on Microsoft Teams or whatever platform they're using. One thing you should definitely do is test the link before the interview. I'm a big advocate of joining the meeting 15 minutes before it started. Technology is a wonderful thing. It doesn't always work as it should. And these online boards and interview platforms they're using, they do periodic updates. And it happened to me this week where I was interviewing someone very senior for a role. There was a update on Microsoft Teams and they couldn't join the interview, and it potentially blown their opportunity because it's just completely slanted their perception from the interviewer's perspective that they weren't organized enough, even though the Microsoft Teams update was that morning. But they didn't test the link during the day, and 15 minutes, they joined beforehand, but that 15-minute window evaporated because they got stressed, and that's the last thing you want somebody to have to go through before an interview. So just eliminate all issues. It's like if you're attending an interview in person, getting there early so you can settle yourself.
Yeah, and they're a bit more calmer and ready to go.
They're putting their best foot forward, yep. And that's what you want to do. And make sure you're dressed for success. I always believe in dressing where you're going, irrespective of what the other person's wearing. That's not important. They've got the job. They're working at the company. It gives you confidence in the interview and how you present yourself and articulate yourself.
Great. And I liked some of the tips you've given when it's on Teams, which is mostly where interviews are done. But face-to-face, body language, eye contact is very important. Can you maybe just give us a few tips on your doing an interview face-to-face?
And I'll take it one step back. Face-to-face or on Teams, treat them exactly the same because it's the same characteristics in terms of behavior. Communication is not all what's coming out of your voice. It's coming out how you're engaging, your demeanor in your face, smiling, being positive, your posture in your seat, whether you're on Teams or if I'm in front of you like I am now. It's how I carry myself, and they're just subtle things, but they make a difference in terms of how you come across and how you present yourself.
Excellent. So Peter, we talked about preparation, body language, prepare yourself when you're doing your virtual interview. What about some of the common pitfalls that people should try and avoid during the interview? So I know, for example, one is not to use the same example multiple times.
I agree. If you're highlighting the same example, they've got a limiting belief of you, and that's the last thing you want. So when a job's put up there, there's three or four key competencies, key behavioral characteristics that they want to see displayed in somebody that they've got through experience and through their working career that exhibited in this role that they're recruiting. So you should have two examples of each that you can be on point. You can even write those key competencies and put it down in front of you in the interview. People go, what's that? And you say, well, these are the key competencies I've identified for this role. It's a positive. And you can have your examples as reference points, like bullet points, to illustrate those competencies. Nothing wrong with that. It shows a level of preparedness. It's an opportunity for you to showcase yourself in the best manner. Another thing, not using slang or inappropriate language, keeping it professional. You're on show, you need to keep it to the conversation that you're having with the person that's interviewing you.
Yes, and the other one is, what about when people sound too scripted because they've prepared so well, practiced and practiced, that they've pretty much learned word from word, but then in the interview, it feels like they're just reading off a script.
That's a really good point. Coming across too mechanical, so or the person's telling you basically what you want to hear, you need to break that up. It can't come across that way. And one thing that I was going to talk to you about is, even if you've got a flatmate or spouse, husband, children, write out the questions that you think you're going to be asked in the interview and get them to do a role play with you. That is an absolute gold way. And it sounds ridiculous, but if you've got your child reading out the questions to you and you're reciting it back, just hearing your own voice and how you communicate back, it's a fantastic way of preparing.
Yeah, I agree. And what happens if you don't have an answer for a particular question or you don't have an example? How should you respond to that?
Be honest and say, look, I can't think of an answer to demonstrate that competency, or I can't think of an example that comes to mind. And then I'd ask a question to sort of determine how much latitude I have. But you can say, look, I've never done this, but I have done something that I think is similar. Would you like me to elaborate and explain this point, which I think covers aspects of what I think you're trying to ask? And that's a deflecting sort of maneuver, but it's also not shutting it down.
No, I think that's a great idea to provide an example that maybe covers some of the questions. Is it good to just say, I don't have an example, but I can tell you this is what I would do if I was faced that scenario?
Spot on. So if you haven't done that and you're confident enough to answer it that way, absolutely. So I haven't been faced with that situation before. It's something that if I was faced with this situation, this is how I would approach it. And that's a fantastic way also.
Great. Okay. And let's go back to what you mentioned earlier about it's a two-way conversation, because you also want to walk out in the interview knowing that, hey, if I do get the job, I can see myself working with these people because I had a good interaction. So when they go, Peter, do you have any questions for us? What should you be asking?
You've got a window to assess where you're going to be working, and you want to understand the culture and what motivates people. It comes back to the company's values and mission statement. It all needs to embody what you're looking for to bring out the best in you. you skipping or not paying attention to these areas can have a dramatic effect in terms of how successful you are in that role. So it comes down to you also asking the right questions in the interview to make sure you're the right fit. Because they may think you're the right fit, but you may not be the right fit for them from your perspective. And that's really important. So asking an interviewer, where would you like me to be in 1 week, 1 month, 6 months, 3 months from here? What sort of expectations would you have for the successful person? And where would you like them to be in these sort of key milestones? That's sort of a good way of sort of getting a way in which they think. And to show you've done some background reading on that individual, throw it back on them and say, what motivates you to come to work every day? What do you love about working for this business? Clearly, you've been successful. Sort of what key attributes have helped you with your success here? Something like that is a bit different from saying, what's the onboarding look like in terms of the induction process and how long does it go for? Most people will ask that. Something a little bit left of center, it's important to ask questions that aren't commonly asked. And sometimes those questions will only come during the interview. If they do, write them down. You'll forget them at the end. There's nothing wrong with writing notes during the interview. It might put the interviewer off if they're not that used to that sort of thing, but it's just showing that you're taking real interest in what you're doing.
Totally. I myself ask, what's your management style? Mm-hmm. I think that's a good one. It sort of helps you understand, can I see myself working with and for this person?
A great one. Sometimes they often ask how you like to be managed. Or another way of asking that is, what's the ideal candidate look like for you? What background do you like them to come from? Hopefully that embodies what you've just displayed.
Yeah, of course.
At the end of the interview. Hopefully they'll sort of give you some cues. I often say to candidates when they're interviewed, sometimes they've got a poker face on and they're going to give nothing away how the interview's gone, and they'll keep a neutrality stance. I mean, I don't know why they do that, because I think at the end of the day, it's two human beings interacting and there should be some connection.
Yes.
But there's questions they'll ask that I often ask the candidate. Did they sort of ask you anything that interluded when you're available to start, or how you like to be trained, or anything that infers some sort of positive connection to alluding that you might be successful?
And what about when it comes to negotiating your salary? Is that the right time to have that conversation during the interview, or is it more get offered the role first and then have that conversation?
So the salary should always be in the screening side of things. Salary expectations, they should actually ask, because it's in the ad. If it's not in the ad, you ask a question, because you don't want to sit in an interview the entire time and then find out that it's significantly less than what you were expecting, because it's a waste of both parties' time. So addressing that in the screening, if it's coming up, mentioning it in the interview process is far too early. If you're talking about salary during the interview process, you're doing yourself an injustice, because taking the focus off your ability to do the role, because it's focusing on a monetary aspect, which some employers may say, oh, he's only driven or motivated by money. You're worth not that money until the actual interviewer has a connection with you and thinks you're a valued proposition for that role and really wants you. So there's plenty of time to negotiate at the offer stage. When they come back to you and say, we really want you, Yen, for this role, you are ticking all the boxes, you're now at the interview, and we'd like to offer you this. When can you start? That's when you say, well, I actually was seeking this, and then it becomes a negotiation strategy.
Makes sense. And wrapping it up, any final tips?
One of the things that happens more often than I would like it is that it's a small world, and in any industry, and so not burning your bridges is a really big thing. Never talking derogatory or negative about your previous workplace, because that's an absolute no-no, and people still do it. And you can still illustrate areas of development or areas of improvement at the previous workplace without saying any negative connotation. It's the way you conduct yourself. But getting caught on that trajectory of explaining your last workplace is going to do yourself no favors at all.
Yes, good point.
And my final tip is references. Referees are important. Employers will say referees sometimes aren't worth the paper they're written on, because they're only going to say good things. That's not necessarily true. It depends on how the questions they ask. And so many people come unstuck in this process. Getting the interview passing and getting a job offer is 50% of the equation. People think it's 80% and it's done and dusted. The compliance process is now becoming more and more integral in the process. So being organized with your references is critical. You have to have references already in mind who you're going to ask. And I'm a big believer, it's an investment of time from the person giving the reference. So a courtesy call and actually notifying that reference that, look, I've just been for this job, I've been successful. Would you mind if I provided you as a referee to the company that I'm going for? And this is the position and this is the responsibilities, but it correlates with what I did for you. And giving a reference is a 10-minute exercise. So somebody will call me and it's the first time I'm hearing is from an employer, and it happens a lot. I've had no notification, this employer's ringing me and they're wanting to do a reference. It's going to take 10 minutes of your time to go through this, and I'm already on the back foot because the person's not asked me, and just a courtesy call. And of course I'd give them a reference if they'd rung me, and I still do give them a reference, but it's probably not as glowing as it should be because they just haven't been respectful of my time, and that's just a courtesy that you should practice. So building and keeping connections is really important. And illustrates straight up if you're organized. So have your two references lined up, and maybe having four as a back four. And if you've worked for example, in the one company for say more than 5 years, you may want two references, because if you haven't got a referee that covers the entire period that you work there, good idea to have two referees.
Great tip. Thanks, Peter.
Pleasure, Yen.
Another great episode with Peter. This time we talked about the do's and don'ts of interviews. Similar to crafting a perfect CV, it's all about preparation. You need to do your research about the company, if possible, the interviewers that you're meeting, so therefore you can align your examples to their requirements. And you also need to make sure you do those little things because they count. So make sure you dress professionally, checking your links to your interview work if it's virtual, and remember to always have good eye contact, use positive body language. These are all play important parts of making a good impression. Your preparation not only enhances your chances of landing the job, but also helps you gauge if the company is the right fit for you. Good luck in your next interview. In the meantime, don't forget to follow the podcast and make today a good news day.